Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case for argument this morning is United States against Wilkie. Ms. Cook.
Morning. May it please the court, counsel. Law enforcement officers converted what might otherwise have been a routine traffic stop into an unconstitutional intrusion by detaining Mr. Wilkie and Mr. Clark for an objectively unreasonable length of time before they deployed a drug dog and developed probable cause to search the vehicle. The time that elapsed prior to the deployment of the drug dog was 18 to 20 minutes, and it was objectively unreasonable under the unique circumstances of this case. There are three factors that are important in this analysis: the original basis for the stop, the length of the detention, and those allegedly suspicious circumstances which developed during the stop. First, the basis for the stop. The fact that Clark and Wilkie's truck had a license plate light which was not illuminated was merely a pretext for a criminal investigation. And we agree that a pretextual stop is constitutionally permissible under Wren and concede that there was a legitimate basis for the stop, that being the inoperable license plate light. But where law enforcement officers have an underlying agenda, that underlying agenda is a part of the totality of the circumstances which must be considered.
The holding of Wren is that the analysis is wholly objective. Never look at their arguments about their motivation.
In this particular case, motivation...
No. There is a holding in Wren. It says the analysis is objective. Stop. I don't know how one can then say, but in this case, let's look at our assumptions about their motives.
Because I think that it's important in this particular analysis to recognize that the law enforcement officer is purposefully delaying.
Yeah, but that sounds like I think it's important in this case that you ignore Wren, because we can't win if you follow Wren.
Well,
but that's not a good reason for us to ignore the Supreme Court.
Wren focuses on the initial stop, and what is important in this case is the reason for the increased delay. The second factor is the length of the detention itself. In this case, 18 to 20 minutes before the drug dog was employed. A routine traffic stop such as this one should be a relatively brief encounter, long enough only to give law enforcement officers time to identify the driver and issue a citation, unless intervening circumstances develop which give rise to objectively reasonable...
Well, what citation should have been issued in this case, do you think?
For an equipment failure, for not having an operable license plate
light. What about not having proof of insurance?
These occupants of this vehicle were not required to have proof of insurance under Indiana law for two reasons. One is that an out-of-state driver with an out-of-state vehicle is not required to maintain insurance in Indiana. And secondly, because even an Indiana driver who is required to maintain insurance is under Indiana law not required to carry proof of it in the vehicle. So no citation should have been issued in this case. It's important in this case to remember that the drug dog was available from the beginning of the traffic stop and could have been deployed at any time. Law enforcement officers immediately obtained the identification of the driver and give as one of the reasons for delaying the stop the fact that that driver's identification was torn. But the evidence was that even though it was torn, the name could be read and the photo could be identified as that of the driver. We agree that it was valid to ask some further questions, but that inquiry lasted only 2 minutes, after which the officer had all the information which he needed to radio in the license information, and there's no evidence that he ever submitted that information until after the search. So the logical inference is that the information was obtained and not used. The detention of Clark and Wilkie then continued by the questioning of Clark, and there was no reason for him to be questioned as his identification
was
valid.
I have another question. How did the delay play a causal role? Since the dog was in the officer's car, had the officer gone and got his dog in the first minute after the stop, everything else would have developed as it did.
Everything else may have developed as it did, but the officer would then have been detaining Mr. Wilkie and Mr. Clark for a very brief period of time prior to developing probable cause. In this case,
yes,
they waited.
Yes, how? Look, the evidence can be suppressed only if, had proper procedures been followed, it would not have been obtained.
proper procedures.
Your view is a proper procedure requires the dog to be trotted out immediately, and then you get the same affirmative alert and the same evidence. So I don't see
my view
why there's anything different here.
That proper procedures would require that the occupants of this motor vehicle not be detained for an unreasonable period of time.
I don't think you're listening to my question. Your view is it's unreasonable to wait 18 minutes before bringing out the dog. My question says, okay, suppose the officer had agreed and used the dog 1 minute after the stop. The dog still would have alerted, then there would have been probable cause, and that would have, everything else would have followed. How is it that the delay led to the evidence?
The delay didn't lead to the evidence. The delay led to the unreasonable detention of a motorist who should have been permitted to go on his way.
An unreasonable detention was not admitted in evidence. Your claim is a motion to suppress evidence. You can't suppress a delay. You can only suppress the evidence. And so far as I can see, the evidence would have been discovered had there been no delay. That's why I'm puzzled about all of this.
Well, with all due respect, we think that this is an impingement on the motorist's right to travel and not to be unreasonably detained while the officer makes inquiries that have nothing to do with the original purpose for the stop or any reasonable circumstances which are discovered in the interim. The facts which the officer cite as the basis for continuing the delay and, in his mind, deploying the drug dog, do not give rise to any objectively reasonable suspicion, either viewed individually or collectively. The facts that are cited, first, that the vehicle slowed down after it passed law enforcement officers, I think is probably a common reaction. The fact that there were four suitcases in the bed of the truck, the officer indicates that gave rise to suspicion because these were male occupants of the vehicle, would not have been suspicious had they been female occupants, but gives neither a reason for that position nor any past experience that would validate that as a suspicious circumstance.
If the officer made this stop, as you say, and then, say, wrote a warning ticket to say that you got to get that light fixed?
No, Your Honor, he didn't write the warning ticket.
No, I know that. I'm saying if he had done that, and this would have taken maybe 5 minutes. In the meantime, the other officer trotted the dog around, which is okay, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And he would have alerted, and there wouldn't have been an unreasonable delay in no case, right?
That's correct.
Counsel, how about the inconsistencies in their trip as to where they were going and how they got there?
We believe that the inconsistencies can be explained by the manner in which the questions were asked.
That was the officer's judgment at that time. Is there anything improper about that judgment? Not what you believe.
No, I don't think there's anything improper about that judgment. But even if the inconsistent stories seemed reasonable to the officer at the time, the delay continued well past the time when he received those stories. He continued to, for example, seek information about the insurance documentation, which was not a valid inquiry for him. It's our position that the officers did not diligently pursue a means of investigation that was likely to confirm or dispel the suspicion quickly, during which time it was necessary to detain the defendants.
How about the excitedness of the operator of the vehicle, his nervousness?
His nervousness.
What about the 8 or 9 air fresheners?
The nervousness.
Isn't that suspicious?
No, Your Honor. The nervousness
you
of the driver.
Do you carry those in your car? Do you ever hear anybody do that?
Well, all
unless
of the cases.
Selling them.
All of the cases that have referred to air fresheners in cars have focused on the odor of those air fresheners. This court in United States versus Patterson focused on the heavy odor.
Well, we're talking about the accumulation of all of these matters, not just one. I'm trying to recite the accumulation of it.
And it would be our position that where no reasonable suspicion arises from any of the individual facts, there is no reasonable cumulative suspicion as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cook. Ms. Ridgway.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Cynthia Ridgway. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney representing the appellee in this case. I'll focus my argument, if I may, on the salient issue that I see, not the initial stop, rather the time between that stop and between reasonable suspicion being developed by Sergeant Sellers, which was approximately 8 to 10 minutes. During those 8 to 10 minutes, a number of intervening factors were observed, the aggregate of which developed into reasonable suspicion on Samuel Sellers, Sergeant Sellers' part. Judge Coffey has directed or referenced some of them, the inconsistencies between the driver and the passenger, along with the 8 or 9 air fresheners observed by Sergeant Sellers, combining that with the fact that at 2 o'clock in the morning, this vehicle, which was driving only 2 miles over, suddenly came to a 10 miles per hour after observing the police officer's vehicle.
Isn't that what everybody does?
Well, I don't think so. I believe that what would be reasonable, and especially in this law enforcement officer's perspective, is if you're driving 2 miles over the speed limit, you may think, all right, I've done a pretty good job. I'm not speeding that much. And you might just stay the course rather than slowing 10 miles slower, so that you're driving about 7 miles underneath the speed limit. I think that that, in addition to the other factors and looking at the totality of the circumstances, certainly gave suspicion to Samuel Sellers. In addition to the slowing, then, of course, upon approach, Samuel Sellers observed four large suitcases. And when you combine those large suitcases with the inconsistencies provided by the passenger and the driver regarding a 3 to 5 day trip from California en route to New York, and the inconsistency with regard to where the individuals had stayed, and we submit that that was certainly an inconsistency, the passenger was asked, did you stay with your brother? And his response, quite frankly, was no, we stayed at the hotel, which was certainly different from what the driver had previously stated, which is that the two had been staying at the passenger's brother's house. Combining that with the fact that Samuel Sellers observed not only the driver but the passenger also acting nervously, displaying nervous behavior, he certainly was well within his right to believe, based on those specific and articulable facts, that there was criminal activity afoot. Based on that reasonable suspicion, Your Honors, Sergeant Sellers then deployed, after conducting a further investigation to determine whether or not his suspicions were correct, he then deployed his drug dog, who positively indicated to the presence of the odor of controlled substance.
The other dog was there. The dog was there.
Yes,
pretty
Your
quickly.
Honor.
Why'd they wait?
I can't say for certain why they waited. I believe that they were initially trying to determine whether or not something was afoot. When he originally approached, he saw several factors that gave rise to his criminal or his reasonable suspicion, that being the air fresheners, the immediate nervous behavior, and the four large suitcases. At that point, I believe that Sergeant Sellers would have been within his right to deploy his drug dog while he was also issuing a citation. But in this instance, I believe that Samuel Sellers took a more cautious approach and wanted to make sure that his suspicions were correct, and did so by asking the driver and the passenger questions, not only to determine identity, but also regarding the nature and duration of their trip. After the reasonable suspicion was developed, Your Honors, the dog, Jasper, positively indicated to the odor of the controlled substances, and it was after that time that the vehicle was searched. The government believes that Mr. Sergeant Sellers was well within his right to delay these individuals for a reasonable amount of time, and if the court has no further questions, I would respectfully ask that you affirm the district court's decision.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Daisy?
The question implies I shouldn't have anything further, but I do briefly, Your Honor. The court in argument appears to be considering an inevitable dog rule. Inevitable discovery in this case through an inevitable dog. There's a dog in the back of the car.
It wasn't an inevitable dog. It was in the car. All agreed it was not a dog coming. It was a dog in presence.
Certainly. So the court's question is, what difference does it make if the delay was unreasonable? The dog was going to get out and sniff anyway, and the dog was going to go off and alert. And I would argue that a central premise of Caballes was this, that the delay in bringing the dog out must be reasonable in scope and duration, period. What's the interest protected?
That sounds
it's a liberty
like you just want us to disregard the inevitable discovery rule.
No, I would argue in this case that inevitable discovery can't mean that a policeman can violate the central tenet of Caballes and engage in an unreasonable delay, both in scope and duration, and then trot his dog out and find that, I mean, otherwise that holding means nothing. What does it matter? Why would the Supreme Court?
That's just a general disagreement with the inevitable discovery doctrine. Defense lawyer make that argument in every inevitable discovery case. And, of course, we follow the Supreme Court.
We seem to lick our wounds quite often in that area. But I'd point out.
Or bring out the canine to lick your wounds for you.
Yes, I could. In this case, he was close at hand. Mm-hmm. I would argue, as I would always.
We have your position.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
We have your position. Thank you.
I'll sit down now. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Ms. Cook, for accepting the appointment and the assistance you've been to your client in the court. The case is taken under advisement.